Good afternoon. I'm Callie Crossley, and this is the Callie Crossley Show. Today, Mayor Menino will hold a bike safety summit in response to a recent rash of bike accidents that culminated last week in a fatal crash between a cyclist and an MBTA bus. Joining us to talk about what it will take to reduce the hazards of Boston biking are Nicole Friedman, bike czar for the City of Boston, and David Watson, Executive Director of Mass Bike. Nicole Friedman and David Watson, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Nice to be here.
Listeners, you won't be surprised to know that both of them biked here to the studio, and they looked pretty good for it.
David was a little faster.
Okay. I don't know how long it took you to get here, but they both biked here. The cover of the Metro, which is the free daily that is handed out, says, "You gotta be nuts to bike in this city." That's the headline story leading up to this bike summit tonight. Is Boston a bike city, Nicole?
Yeah, 2 years ago, Mayor Meaner committed to making Boston a world-class bicycling city. And the city's made great progress under his leadership. We added 15 miles of bike lanes. We've added 500 racks. And we had a history of being rated the worst cycling city in the country. The new rankings came out. Boston was 26th in Bicycling Magazine. And we also had a full-page feature in Bicycling Magazine where they rated us the up-and-coming city to watch. So
26 out of
all of the cities in the country.
Oh, okay. So that's hundreds, presumably.
Yeah. So the mayor's commitment is real. We've done a lot. We know how much more we have to go, and the mayor's committed to making it happen.
And yet these three incidents just highlight, you know, the issues for bikers in Boston, right? Isn't that true, Dave?
Well, I agree with Nicole that the reputation Boston has for being a poor bicycling city is undeserved. I think even before the Boston Bikes program started, we were blessed with a city that's laid out very well for cycling and a great cycling community, a very diverse and quite large cycling community that was already riding. What we've seen now over the past few years is a huge increase in the number of cyclists. It started about 2.5 years ago when we saw gas prices shoot up suddenly. And then even after they came down, we continued to see ongoing increases in the number of cyclists. But what we're seeing is there are a lot more cyclists out there who may not be aware how to ride as safely as possible. We're also seeing motorists being very unsure how to interact safely with the growing number of cyclists.
So should everybody be cycling? I mean, are there people that ought not be on a bike? David.
I think almost everybody can integrate a bike into part of their life. We're not talking about an all-or-nothing proposition. You don't have to be an all-weather, 365-day-a-year, 20-mile-a-day bike commuter. If you're just able to shift some of your shorter trips from driving to biking or walking, that would make a huge difference. And we're talking about trips only in the 1 to 3 mile range, which accounts for about 50% of all trips.
Because you're really talking about people commuting to work or trying to commute to their major place of business.
Well, commuting or going to school or going shopping or visiting your friends. There are any number of things that many people drive to do today that you could actually consider doing sometimes by bike.
Now, Nicole, what people should know about you is that you were an Olympic cyclist and you also have a background in planning so that you can look at this whole issue from a much broader perspective about, you know, where people should be biking and how they should be biking safely. How do you, tonight, when you're focusing on the safety aspects of this, what can be done right now that maybe this guy who lost his life last week, that won't happen?
Yep. Two key things that we want to talk about tonight is education and enforcement. And for the city, the number one priority of any transportation program and the mayor's goal with our transportation program is safety. And in the short term, improving the education for all users of the road, that's foremost. And you think about it, we live in a big city, and there's a lot of people that live here and are all trying to use the road simultaneously. And we've got pedestrians, cars, and cyclists, and they're competing for the road. And what we need to get across is that we all need to respect each other. We need to share the road and respect each other and be less aggressive.
I was reading some comments, and I read from cyclists talking about being doored.
Yeah.
With, I guess that's just, you know, motorists opening up their door and slamming into the cyclists who may be coming up beside a parked car or a parking car.
So absolutely.
That happens a lot.
Awareness to the cars that you need to look behind you because there's cyclists there. So when you open your door, look behind you. To the cyclists, wear a helmet. Our goal is to make the roads as safe as possible. It's still important for cyclists to, and I like to think of it as respect yourself, wear a helmet, because if you do get in an accident, it doesn't matter whose fault it is, the helmet will save your life.
Now, David, you've been quoted as saying there's a me first attitude going on here, which makes it, you know, that's one of the ongoing problems with trying to do what Nicole has said needs to be done.
Well, what we see is that cyclists aren't unique. We're very much like everybody else in the Boston area in the way we think about how we get around. And unlike some other cities where I've biked or walked, we see bicyclists not following the rules, lots of motorists following the rules. I mean, Boston driver is a well-known phrase. And we see a lot of pedestrians not following the rules as well. Everybody seems most concerned with getting wherever they're going as fast as possible and not thinking enough about how what they're doing may impact everybody else who's sharing the same space.
I have to say, from a personal experience, I am now a nervous wreck when I see cyclists coming up beside me, because a dear friend of mine lost her brother because of a motorist who was at fault. And he was on his cycle, on his bicycle, doing what he was supposed to do, but the motorist was not. So I'm just about a nervous wreck. And I don't think that's the proper attitude either for a motorist to have when you see a cyclist. I mean, what can I do to reduce my tension so that I'm being safe as well?
Well, the nervousness, I think, comes largely from the fact that most motorists just don't know how they're supposed to behave around bicyclists. And that cuts two ways. They don't know what the law actually is and what they're required to do. And they don't understand the common sense parts about maneuvering around cyclists. We're launching a major safety campaign in cooperation with four state agencies called Same Roads, Same Rules. And the focus of that is on bicyclists and motorists, getting people to understand how to interact safely, which is a combination of following the rules and using common sense, and really trying to put a human face on each other so that we're not just viewing each other monolithically as those are the drivers and these are the bicyclists. We're all just people trying to get somewhere safely.
Nicole, the best cities seem to for cyclists seem always to be west. You know, Davis, California, Portland, Oregon, Seattle. These are the places that come to mind, and many other California cities. Why? I guess is the question.
Well, that's a good question. They did start their programs 10, 15 years ago, and they've committed a lot of time to developing a bike network. New York City recently has done some fantastic work, and in many ways they're pioneers.
Now, how is that? They have more people crowded up in a smaller space, so how can they be better than us?
Well, they started ahead of us, but we definitely are following what they're doing and employing some of the best practices. At some point, and in Boston we now say this, the car is no longer king. And in our transportation programs, the mayor's made it very clear that we're going to have a complete streets policy, and it will look at the needs of pedestrians, it will look at the needs of cyclists, and it will look at the needs of cars and really balance those. And what that means is you might make trade-offs. So you might have a road that has three car lanes, and you realize, well, if we remove one car lane or if we remove a lane of parking, it doesn't reduce the level of service much for cars, but it dramatically improves the climate for the bikers and the pedestrians. And when the car is no longer king, you can start looking at those trade-offs and make some very significant infrastructure improvements that will really impact the safety for all users of the road.
And that can help. We have narrow streets here in Boston. You know, all the historical stuff, that is the cost of, you know, preserving that, is that the streets are quite narrow. So that would offset, presumably, some of that as an issue.
Yes, correct.
This is Earth Day week, and, you know, all of this bike riding is very environmentally friendly. Dave, I wonder if you have any stats or information about what is the difference in those communities that we know are best cities for cycling in terms of lower impact on the environment, better health, all of that stuff.
Well, there's no question if you look particularly at European cities where the percentage of people who are biking regularly is much higher than any city in the U.S. In the U.S., the best cities are somewhere around 5% of trips. In Europe, there are some cities that are north of 30% of trips are being made by bike. And in those cities, you definitely see people are healthier. I believe they've measured significant or measurable differences in greenhouse gas emissions, and they have definitely reduced traffic congestion in their urban core.
Okay. Nicole wants to get in on this. Go ahead.
Love statistics.
Nicole Friedman, bike czar for the city of Boston. Go ahead.
This is the numbers part of me. League of American Bicyclists did a great study. They looked at the 10 best bike-friendly cities in the U.S., compared them to the 10 worst bike-friendly cities, and they found that there's 25% less deaths due to asthma and air quality issues in the bike-friendly cities than the least bike-friendly cities. There's another statistics from them, and I can't remember the numbers, but they surveyed a number of people in the bike friend that didn't bike, and then they surveyed a bunch that did bike. And in a follow-up study 10 years later, basically what came out is there were a lot more alive still of the ones that biked. But another good number, 13 pounds. The average first-year cycling commuter loses 13 pounds.
Hey!
And, you know, for Boston, we see cycling at really the nexus of the sustainability initiative, the economic initiatives, economic development, and health and obesity.
Well, and you got Mayor Menino biking, so that says something too. That, yeah. We can all speak to longevity as far as he's concerned, right?
Absolutely.
In office and otherwise.
And the mayor is really the perfect ambassador because he is who the program is about. The mayor's bike program is about making Boston welcoming for anyone to bike. It's not just cyclists. It's not about people wearing spandex, but it's about a father pulling his child in a stroller, a grandmother riding with, you know, a son or daughter. It's about everyone being able to bike.
My colleague Emily Rooney wonders, Dave, if you can start a program where there's a bike giveaway. She said she visited a friend, and in the condo association, there were a lot of abandoned bikes for people who used to bike, and now they're just sitting around. And she envisioned a program where maybe everybody showed up on the common and people, you know, were able to get those bikes, similar to what Seattle did, I think, years ago in terms of making sure people had bikes who didn't have them. Is that something you guys might do in the future?
It's not something MassBike does. There are a number of agencies that and municipalities that do collect bikes and redistribute them. And I think Nicole has something to say about that.
Yeah.
We've been working with the Boston Public Health Commission, and we just received a grant. And as part of the grant, one of our tasks is to refurbish and distribute 1,000 bicycles to individuals from low-income families.
You might want to hit up Emily Rooney and get her friend to donate the ones and
we will.
Buried in the storage closet.
We're going to take Emily's bike.
Okay. I'm Callie Crossley, and we've been talking about bike safety in Boston with Nicole Friedman, bike czar for the city of Boston, and David Watson, executive director of Mass Bike. Nicole Friedman and David Watson, thank you so much for joining us. If you want to attend the Bike Safety Summit, it's tonight, 5:30 to 7 at Boston University's Morse Auditorium. Up next, it's a look at Episcopal Barbie and what we can learn from the 11.5-inch doll about the role of women in the clergy. We'll be back after this break. Stay with us.
Support for WGBH comes from you and from Zeiterion Theater in New Bedford, celebrating the 40th anniversary of Earth Day with the Paul Winter Consort and 90 singers and musicians, Friday, April 23rd. Information at Zeiterion.org. And from Skinner, auctioneers and appraisers of antiques and fine art. You might consider auction when downsizing a home or selling a collection. 60 auctions annually, 20 collecting categories. Boston and Marlboro, online at SkinnerInc.com.
You can!
At 89.7, we know that you love public radio, but that doesn't mean you can't have a thing for television, too, especially when the program sounds like this.
get what you need.
Support Public Radio with a sustaining gift of $5 a month or $60 a year, and WGBH will say thanks with the soundtrack to the popular television program, Glee.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain. We all have sorrow. But if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me.
Call 888-897-9424 or do your part securely online at WGBH.org.
You carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lead.
And that number is 888-897-9424, or click the donate button on our secure website, WGBH.org. A great time to do your part for WGBH during the spring community campaign, because we have a dollar-for-dollar match going on right now from a very small group of dedicated WGBH members from the Ralph Lowell Society. I'm Barry Nelson in studio with Callie Crossley, singing along with Glee.
Yes.
And I know you're a big fan. The new season premiere was last night, and
was Glee-tastic. Let me just tell you, that show, that episode last night is definitely an Emmy Award winner, no question.
Nice. It, you know, the whole a cappella scene is, especially in Massachusetts, but all over college campuses across America, just a huge, huge deal. We've actually had some shows on channels 2 and 44, too, but you love a cappella.
I love a cappella. I love what they're doing on the Glee show, too, which is really about show Glee, where they use instruments as well.
Sure, yeah.
It's just about that harmonizing song. Reminds me of my college days when I was in a choir.
You were?
And, oh,
nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Good.
You know, I can sing a song, sometimes off key, Barry.
Well, speaking of matching things, the match is on right now. We're having a dollar-for-dollar match. So when you call in and you make a contribution of $50, $100, $150 to support programs like this here on 89.7, we will make sure that your pledge is matched dollar-for-dollar. And the number to call is 888-897-9424, or online you can see the Glee soundtrack as well at WGBH.org. That soundtrack, yours for a contribution of $5 a month, and we would love to send that to you just for this $60 pledge.
Special guests are making their way into the WGBH studios right now. Literally, as you're hearing this, engineers are adjusting levels. Hosts and producers are going over questions. It's all really happening. And it's all thanks to the very real dollars you contribute during these on-air campaigns. This local live program is a collaborative effort, and your part in the process is the vital link that holds everything together. That's why, as the guests and the hosts and the folks behind the scenes do their part, we hope you'll do yours by making a financial gift in any amount. The number to call is 888-897-9424. Or if you're by your computer, just visit our secure website, WGBH.org. And thanks.
Good afternoon. I'm Callie Crossley, and this is the Callie Crossley Show. Forget about Malibu Barbie. The doll has gone devout, trading in her sweater sets and swimsuits for cloaks and cassocks. And the transformation from beach bunny to ordained priest is giving us something to think deeply about in terms of how women are perceived in the clergy. Joining us to talk about this latest career move in Barbie's long life is Reverend Julie Blake Fisher. She is the creator of the Episcopal Priest Barbie and the rector of Christ Episcopal Church in Kent, Ohio. And here with me is Reverend Sarah Irwin, rector of the Christ Church Episcopal in Waltham. Reverend Fisher and Reverend Irwin, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Hey, Callie.
Reverend Fisher, I have to start with you. Now, you had a past life as a professional dressmaker, so you had the skills to give Barbie her new costuming, her holy costuming, as it will. But why did you decide to do it?
Well, about 2 years ago,
My church was using a Sunday school program that has children use different kinds of toys and tools to do hands-on learning about the gospel. So I thought they'd like to have a doll they could dress up to learn about the vestments. And, of course, Barbie came to mind. I have a lot of little girls in my church. So I made a basic set of vestments for her, and the kids really like that a lot.
She has a whole set, I understand, according to one piece I read, various colored chasubles, the sleeveless vestments worn at Mass for every liturgical season, black clergy shirt with white collar, neat skirt and heels, a laptop with prepared sermon, and a miniature genuine Bible. This is fabulous. All the details.
Well, originally, she just had a very basic set of what I wear on Sunday. But when a friend of mine, who is also a priest, saw her, she just fell in love with her and said, "If you ever have time, I would buy one if you made one." Well, she got a pulpit call out of state, and I decided she needed a farewell present. So I took the Barbie I already had and thought I would send that to her. But I thought maybe I should just add a little extra, make something new to go with her that she hasn't seen before. So I started making one thing after another, and before I knew it, she was Episcopal Priest Barbie, High Church Edition. The High Church wing of our church is leans towards Catholic spirituality. So I dressed Barbie to the nines in everything that someone with Catholic spirituality would have.
Okay, now the Barbie right now is with Reverend Dina Cleaver Bartholomew. That's your friend, who's the rector of Christ Episcopal Church in Manolis, New York, near Syracuse.
A lot of Christ churches today, huh?
Yeah, a lot of them. And I should let our listeners know that Episcopal Barbie has 6,500 Facebook fans at last count, her own Facebook page. So this is no small thing.
Actually, it's up to 7,300 today.
Well, see, there you go, even as we speak. I want to get Reverend Irwin in this. What did you think when you first heard about Episcopal Barbie?
I just think it's adorable. You know, Barbie is certainly a freighted topic. You know, I grew up and played with Barbies and came out of it okay, but there are certainly lots of issues with body image and expectations of female beauty and everything that come along with her. But she's also this icon of, you know, childhood. And so why shouldn't, you know, my profession be reflected there?
Now, it's only been 30 years since women have been allowed to be priests in the Episcopal Church. You look to be just about that age, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm 31. So the first women priests were ordained before I was born.
What does this say? What does this mean in terms of the role of women in the clergy and the church? Because Episcopal Barbie has sparked a real conversation about this.
I think it's a sign that we're getting where we need to be, but we're not there yet. I think the amount of conversation that it's created in terms of the critical end is certainly a sign that not everyone shares our opinion. And even in the church, of people who might, you know, say, yes, we support women clergy, it's a little bit different when they're actually going to have a woman priest in their congregation. But, you know, as far as my experience goes, I feel I've been at my parish now for almost 5 years. And it's true, you know, I came there when I was 27.
Wow.
And but we have this great relationship now, and I'm just their priest, and that's the way it is. But there's still some work to do, certainly.
What was the initial reaction, and what is it like now?
I think initially there was a question of, well, you know, who is this woman? And, oh, my gosh, she's so young. And and a little, maybe a little unsureness. But we've gotten to know each other. And now I think it's just a matter of course. I mean, I have two kids now, and I had both of them in the course of working at Christ Church. So we've really kind of grown together. The congregation has grown. We've got a lot more families and people coming into the congregation now than when I was first there. So we're all just growing together in our faith and in our practice.
Now, Reverend Fisher, you made the doll for, the first one, of course, for your young parishioners and for your friend now who has the one with the full complement of clergy outfits. But you said that you really wanted an Episcopal Barbie to be a tool for evangelism. Can you explain?
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a couple different reasons for making her. Besides just wanting the children to be able to play with the vestments, I also wanted girls to see that that was a possible vocation for them as well. I felt called to the priesthood when I was 12 years old, but I'm a little older than Sarah. I'm 49. And when I first felt called, women weren't allowed to be priests, and there was nothing to encourage girls who might feel that vocation from God. I didn't see a woman priest until I was 18 years old. And so having a Barbie enables girls to imaginatively play all the different possibilities that God might call them to in life. And so I was hoping that having a Barbie there would be something supportive for girls in ministry. Also, I wanted to glorify God. I love being a priest. I get such joy out of it. And so making Barbie was my way of laughing with God. God has a fabulous sense of humor.
I want to share with some of our listeners some of the highlights from the Facebook page. Audrey Ledgerwood said she just found out about Episcopal Priest Barbie from my daughter, Episcopal Priest Sherry, who's the same age as Barbie, and both became priests in midlife. So lots in common. Then there's another one. This is really great. Best regards from a Danish female minister. My dress looks a bit different. And I love this one. Saw this in the local Syracuse paper this morning and loved it. Many, many laughing clergy in heaven right now.
I love that comment, too.
Now, I'm going back to Reverend Irwin, who is the rector of Christ Church Episcopal here in Waltham. And let me share with you some of the comments that aren't so nice. Please, no priestesses. Any man or woman wearing the Roman collar is an imposter if he is not an authentic Catholic priest. And that's because some of the garments look very similar. It's impossible for a woman to be Roman Catholic priest. If a woman is wearing a Roman collar, immediately it is apparent that she is a fraud. How do you respond to that, Reverend Irwin?
I guess I feel like I think sometimes, you know, you look at denominational differences and we're all just trying to be faithful Christians in the way that we understand God is calling us to be. And I think, you know, being having female clergy or having gay and lesbian clergy is not some sort of concession to modernity. It's not like the church is in this position away and says, well, you know, look at these things that are okay in society, so we should make those things okay in the church too. The church is about justice and peace and equality. That's the dream of God. That's what God wants for everyone. And our congregations and our clergy all have to – are called to – represent that peace and equality. And I think it's, you know, we read scripture differently. Sorry.
We are speaking with Reverend Sarah Irwin, who is the rector of the Christ Church Episcopal in Waltham, and the Reverend Julie Blake Fisher, who is the creator of Episcopal Priest Barbie. Listeners, we want to hear from you. What's been your experience in the church? Would you like to see women clergy in the church? And are you a woman who has not pursued a career in the church because you fear discrimination? We're at 877-301-8970. That's 877-301-8970. Now, Reverend Fisher, Reverend Irwin has a particular another aspect to the story that I think is interesting, in that your husband is also ordained. And yet when you were both looking for work, what happened?
It was a little different. My husband is the priest at Grace Church in Medford here in the Boston area. And we entered the ordination process at the same time, and we went to seminary together, and we actually got married in seminary, and we were ordained on the same day. And our resumes looked a lot alike coming out of school. And yet, when we entered the job market, the offers kind of kept rolling in for him and not so much for me. And for two people who are nearly the same on paper, it was pretty striking that that was the one difference. And now I think that we're both in the right place for us. And, you know, one of the things about the Christian faith is that, you know, we don't believe that anything is ever dead. You know, we have this thing called the resurrection that sort of creates newness. So certainly it's turned out well, I wasn't so sure starting out.
Has the recent scandal surrounding the Catholic Church, Reverend Fisher, influenced the conversation about women in the church, do you think?
I think so. Newsweek just recently had an article entitled, What Would Mary Do?, which was about, it said that if women were clergy and equally ran the church in the Catholic Church, that the sex scandal would never have happened. I don't know if that's necessarily so, but I do think that the Episcopal Church can be proud that it has the full range of talents and skills and ability from all members of our church to draw into ordained ministry. And I think that's something we can celebrate. We've been doing that for 30 years, and any church that doesn't do that now is invited to just watch us and see how it works out in practice.
What do you
think?
Very
well so far.
Oh, good. I was going to ask Reverend Irwin what she thought.
You know, yeah, going, I think it's hard to say. I think that in our tradition, we do have this wide variety of people who can be clergy, and that's our practice, and that's our wonderful life-giving practice. And, you know, with Julie, I think we invite others to come and see what that's like, and hopefully, you know, that same model can flourish in other places too. I heard on the radio a while ago in an interview where somebody was talking about the Catholic Church and said that they thought in terms of centuries, not, you know, days and months and years, but centuries. And I just think that that it's a different view.
Do you think it makes a difference that women priests are different in the way they lead in the church than men priests?
That's such a hard question. I'm someone who's never really quite fit well into the sort of feminine stereotype, and so I'm always really uncomfortable with saying that women do things this way and men do things this way. But I think certainly, you know, an experience as someone who is of a, you know, the other, if you will, you know, the one who is not always assumed to be the priest can be the priest, and that you lead from a different way from that standpoint.
We have a caller, Barbara from Newton. Go ahead, please.
I have a friend. She and her husband are both students at the Newton-Andover Theological Seminary. And I asked her about the compensation of women priests versus men priests, and they are by no means equal.
Barbara, that's a provocative question, and we are about to go to break. And when we come back, I'm going to have our guests address that. So can you hang on? Okay.
Yeah.
We are talking about the role of women in the clergy and what can we learn from Episcopal Barbie with my guests, Reverend Julie Blake Fisher and Reverend Sarah Irwin. We'll be back after this break. Stay tuned to 89.7 WGBH.
Support for WGBH comes from you and from Boston Lyric Opera, presenting Mozart's dramatic Idomeneo, sung in Italian with English translation, April 23rd through May 4th at the City Schubert Theater. Info available at blo.org. And from RHCI, the Rehabilitation Hospital of the Cape and Islands, helping patients get home and back to life after illness, injury, or surgery, and get stronger, faster at RHCI. RHCI.org.
And from Windsor Place of Wilmington, an all-new assisted living residence minutes from Boston and New Hampshire off I-93 at exit 38, offering a range of lifestyle and care plans. More at windsorplaceofwilmington.com.
Hello, I'm John Abbott, president of WGBH. This community campaign on 89.7 is all about staying connected. WGBH is a collaborative effort. In the mornings, we hand off to our partners at NPR to bring you the latest from Morning Edition. Later, we work with the team from the live national call-in program, The Diane Rehm Show.
I'd like to welcome our new listeners.
At noon, it's back to our Brighton studios to check in with local leaders and newsmakers during the Emily Rooney and Callie Crossley shows.
We're talking about President Obama's State of the Union address with two of his most careful observers.
Then to PRI's The World, NPR's All Things Considered, the PBS NewsHour. WGBH is your connection for what's happening around the corner and across the globe. And your financial support is the critical link that holds everything together. Please join NPR reporters, local producers, and independent journalists in keeping important news and information easily accessible. Our number is 888-897-9424. Or you can always do your part securely online at WGBH.org. And thank you.
And thank you if you've already called 888-897-9424 or visited WGBH.org today, because if you did, your contribution has been matched dollar for dollar due to a small group of Ralph Lowell Society members who came in this morning and said, we'd really love to help you out by putting $100,000 on the table and saying to the audience, for shows like the Callie Crossley Show, please give to the station and we will match that dollar for dollar. And a lot of folks are taking part in that today. And Callie, yesterday it was a sports. Today it's Barbie. And this issue
is Episcopal Barbie.
Episcopal Barbie.
Not just any Barbie.
This is a complex issue, really. I started listening to it at the beginning, and talk a little bit about it and how you're touching on the subject in a way that's, you know, maybe different. And
well, we like to enter into a discussion about issues coming at it from an angle that has not been explored before. So the creation of Episcopal Barbie gave us an opportunity to really have a broader conversation about women in the clergy, specifically in the Episcopal Church, but certainly even broader right. about women in the church and leadership roles.
So it does have, of course, the local angle. You have someone actually who's holding right now to talk about this subject on the line. So we're taking calls. And so you've got a local, you've got sort of an international. It's a very, you know, it's a complex issue. And we think on public radio, it's a good place for it. The number to call is 888-897-9424 or online at WGBH.org. And speaking of local, for a gift of $60 or just $5 a month as a sustainer, we will send along the Food Lover's Guide to Massachusetts, which has everything food in here, foodies galore.
Yeah, I noticed there were a lot of notations about where to get certain kinds of foods and wine.
Yes.
As you know, I have food and wine contributors.
That's right.
For the Callie Crossley Show, so I'm very interested in that. And some good recipes as well.
Yes, it's a terrific book that if you're sourcing fresh foods or if you want to find out a brewery or if you are interested in anything that's really made in this area, handmade, this is the book. And we'll have a long talk someday about Jonathan Alsop, who is one of your
founder of the Boston Wine School and one of my contributors.
He is one of the funniest people I've ever heard on the radio. So if you love programs like this, please support it by calling 888-897-9424 or online at wgbh.org. And we will make sure that your pledge is matched dollar for dollar when you give a call. Again, $60 gets you the Food Lover's Guide to Massachusetts. And that will just take you along, you know, the wine trails that we have. I always thought that wine trails was something that I left behind.
Oh, no. People will be surprised to know, and they should know, there are wine trails in every state in the Union. There are wineries everywhere.
Yes. And it's a great place to be. And, you know, if you want to support local radio and local purveyors, give us a call, 888-897-9424 or online at wgbh.org.
Make your gift to WGBH go twice as far with the dollar-for-dollar match that's in effect right now. No matter how much you give, other GBH supporters will match your contribution dollar-for-dollar, doubling the size of your gift. Membership starts with a gift in any amount, and every gift made this hour goes twice as far. Call 888-897-9424 or have your gift matched dollar for dollar when you give online at WGBH.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Callie Crossley. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the role of women in the church with Reverend Julie Blake Fisher. She's the creator of the Episcopal Priest Barbie and the rector of Christ Episcopal Church in Kent, Ohio. We're also joined by Reverend Sarah Irwin, rector of the Christ Church Episcopal in Waltham. And before the break, we left Barbara in Newton hanging, and we want to get her back on the line. She'd ask a great question. She has a friend training to be a female priest, but the pay grades are different. Reverend Fisher, you want to weigh in?
Actually, I could say a word to that. When women were first ordained, they found it very difficult to get congregations because in the Episcopal Church, each congregation gets to choose its own priest with help and support from the diocese. So if a congregation was not quite up to hiring a woman, they didn't get one. So a lot of women had to make do with taking parishes that were marginal and that for some reason didn't have a lot of choice in who they could call because they were small, troubled, or didn't have a lot of money. So it's slowly taken time for women to build up positions in the church where they got lots of experience in larger and larger parishes. But I'm glad to say that it's just really improved considerably in the past 10 years. And now our presiding bishop, the head of the entire Episcopal Church, is a woman, the Reverend Catherine Jeffords Shorey.
That's true. Reverend Irwin, you spoke about having difficulty even landing a job as opposed to your husband, who's also ordained. Have you experienced a better situation now in terms of pay equity?
I think it depends. You know, a lot of it does depend on the size of the congregation, and that's how those things are frequently frequently figured out. I remember when Presiding Bishop Shorey was elected, I didn't think it would happen, and then it did, and I was like, well, sure, that's wonderful. She can be the head of the whole church, but is a woman ever going to be called, you know, the rector of an enormous church like Trinity Boston? And now Trinity Boston does have a female rector. So, you know, I find myself being surprised in delightful ways about how well we're doing at times. So, yeah, it's we're working on it.
What do you think in terms of other people who are not in the Episcopal Church, Reverend Fisher, Episcopal Barbie has done to sort of raise awareness, not only about this issue, but about, you know, being Episcopalian?
Well, I believe that on her Facebook site, there have been a lot of comments from Roman Catholics who have a lot of pent-up desire to see pictures of a woman priest. Mm. They've never seen a woman priest. And to see pictures of Barbie looking joyful and happy about being a woman priest wearing the same vestments that they see their priests wearing, to them is a source of joy, a prophecy for the future, hopefully. And it's been a real pleasure for me to give them a word of encouragement with that.
Now, Mattel has not yet endorsed Episcopal Barbie. Do you think it will? The company will?
Oh, I doubt it. I think she's too much of a lightning rod. She offends a certain segment of the conservatives out there and probably wouldn't be good for a mass market.
I might suggest making her part of the American Girl series then. They have a whole background story. It's often controversial. Not a problem for the American girls. You might want to switch that up. But I just want to let our listeners know that you are also making Bishop Barbie, who's African-American, and you're mm-hmm. making Canon Ken, who is next to be finished, and he's Latino. And Ken has a friend in the church who is Deacon Steve. Why?
Well, it seemed the next natural place to go, and a lot of people on her page requested it. So I thought, of course, I need to make a whole set of vestments for Bishop. There are a different set of vestments that they wear. I need to make, and I've been wanting to make, a deacon for a long time. So why not have a male deacon? I wanted to have some boys in there too, not just girls, and some children. So there'll be a Barbie's little sister, Kelly, will be an acolyte, which is one of the children who wear special vestments to help with the liturgy.
Reverend Irwin, do you think you can persuade Reverend Fisher to get you a copy of Episcopal Barbie, or at least Bishop Barbie, something you should have?
I hope so. I certainly hope so. You know, I've got Sunday school kids, too, and I mm-hmm. think they'd love to see this.
I have to say, I've been really enjoying the response by other writers as they described Episcopal Barbie and then went on to, of course, the larger issues. Here's my favorite. This was by Jim Lickman, and I'm not certain where it aired. I think this is Huffington Post. It says, she's smart, sassy, and now she's sanctified. Who am I talking about? Why, it's Episcopal Priest Barbie. I just love that. Reverend Irwin, how did you find out about Episcopal Priest Barbie?
I saw her on Facebook.
Oh, so you're a Facebook person.
I am a Facebook person, yeah. And of course, many of my friends are Episcopal clergy, and I saw one by one becoming friends of Episcopal Priest Barbie, so I had to be too.
What do you want people to take away from, you know, it's lighthearted, but there are some issues here. First to you, Reverend Fisher, what do you want people to take away from this, from Episcopal Priest Barbie?
Who gets ordained is not up to us. It's up to the Holy Spirit, that God calls anybody he wants to be a priest, anybody. It is not up to us to put boundaries around that or restrictions. It would be blasphemous for us to do so. And so anybody can be a priest if God calls them to be. And so Barbie should be a priest too.
What do you think, Reverend Irwin?
I think it's an alternate view of power and privilege. And for so long, anything that is religious or spiritual has been assumed to be in the male domain. And it is not so. And we need to get that word out there that the door is open to everyone.
And yet age and gender are still issues. I mean, not just for the Episcopals, but I mean, I'm a Protestant in the Baptist Church. This is not, I mean, it's male dominated. This is just a mm-hmm. theme across the board. What do you think about that?
It is. It absolutely is. And I think, and you know, any of these things, you know, racism, sexism, homophobia, you know, all of these things are sort of sides I mean, you can't have three sides of a coin, but you can't separate them out. You know, I came to Christchurch as a young woman priest. I am now a mother and a priest. I can't be one and not the other at the same time. And all of these are always, you know, intersecting in different ways. I mean, I came to my priesthood from a particular place of privilege as having been raised in the Episcopal Church. You know, my parents are really involved in the church still in Northwest Pennsylvania. And so, you know, I came into it with certain advantages, too, that I'm aware of that not everyone has either. So we always just have to be looking at these places of privilege and, you know, constantly seeking to undo them and open the doors to more people.
We are speaking with Reverend Sarah Irwin, who is the rector of the Christ Church Episcopal in Waltham, and also the Reverend Julie Blake Fisher, who is the creator of Episcopal Priest Barbie and the rector of Christ Episcopal Church in Kent, Ohio. Reverend Irwin, you were 1 year old when it all changed in the Episcopal Church 30 years ago and women were able to be priests. What do you say to a young woman who's aspiring to be a priest today?
Just go for it. You know, work hard for it. Believe that you can do it. Find good people to support you along the way. And don't take no for an answer for what you know you're called to do.
Reverend Blake Fisher, what would you say to a young woman aspiring to be a priest?
Pray, pray, pray. This is not a job to do unless you are called by God to do it. It's the most wonderful job in the world, but it also is stressful and challenging. And if it is not what God has called you to do, do something else. So pray about it.
It was put to me in a slightly more negative way when I was in the ordination process. Someone said to me, "Please, Sarah, if you can think of anything else to do with your life, do that instead."
Wow.
You really have to be ready to engage in it.
Was this another priest?
It was.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Oh, my, yes.
You're not surprised by that, Reverend Fisher?
No, not at all. No, not at all. And my husband is a priest as well.
Oh, okay.
He was ordained 10 years before I was. And we've been very active in the Episcopal Church ever since we were married 27 years ago. And I knew fully well what I was getting into. And I would never be a priest unless I was called to be one. It's hard to get to be an Episcopal priest. It takes years and years. You have to go to seminary for 3 years. You have to go through many layers of committees that with long lead times of multiple years. And so you have to be very persistent and hang in there. And I know that I would not be a priest unless God had made me one. So it's not something for the faint of heart.
Some people say you can't be it unless you can see it. So the power of Episcopal Barbie may be that others can actually see it. I'm talking about little children now, little girls now.
Absolutely. I would be so gratified if that were so. That's wonderful.
Oh, you agree, Reverend Irwin?
I do. And, you know, I had my family went to a church that had a female priest when I was growing up, and I didn't have any particular relationship with her. Unlike Julie, I wasn't sure that I was called to do this from, you know, age 12. But it was just part of the horizon that was possible. And, you know, in this diocese, Bishop Barbara Harris was the first female bishop in the entire world.
And African-American.
That's right. And, you know, this is what we're about.
So when were you aware of Bishop Harris? I'm just trying to follow the line now.
I think she was consecrated in 89. So I would have been 11 and probably not paying too close attention, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a slight memory of my mother telling me about it and trying to make me understand what a big deal it was. And I was sort of like, oh, sure, whatever, Mom.
But to have the top person now be a woman?
It's a great day. It is, and I think she's doing such a great job. That, you know, the job of the bishop is to be the sign of unity, and I think she's doing a great job.
Well, we're going to leave it there, and I think this is fabulous. I'm not an Episcopalian, but I like Episcopal Barbie. Reverend Julie Blake Fisher is the creator of the Episcopal Priest Barbie and the rector of Christ Episcopal Church in Kent, Ohio. Reverend Sarah Irwin is the rector of the Christ Church Episcopal in Waltham. Reverend Julie Blake Fisher and Reverend Sarah Irwin, thank you so much for joining us. You can keep on top of the Callie Crossley Show by visiting our website, wgbh.org/Callie Crossley. We're a production of WGBH Radio, Boston's NPR station for news and culture.
of Massachusetts, just like Jack and Jill. Massachusetts, we'll climb Bunker Hill. Massachusetts, spread the news around the Massachusetts bar.
Support your local connection for one-of-a-kind programs from NPR, PRI, and WGBH with a sustaining gift of $5 a month. And 89.7 will say thanks with the Food Lover's Guide to Massachusetts. Written by Cambridge-based authors Patricia Harris and David Lyon, the Food Lover's Guide to Massachusetts is loaded with the latest information on local farmers markets, restaurants, and foodie events, plus best-loved recipes from some of the Commonwealth's most celebrated chefs. Call 888-897-9424 or make your contribution securely online at wgbh.org.
And that number, 888-897-9424, and online at wgbh.org. That's where people have been checking in all day today to tell WGBH that they appreciate public radio that's international and local all at the same time. I'm Barry Nelson here with Callie Crossley, who put together another great live show for us here today, talking about Episcopalian Barbie, Episcopal Barbie, and biking around the city.
Yeah, the Bike Safety Summit coming up tonight.
This is the kind of programming that I really think that needs to be covered here on the radio, on public radio, in the way that we do it. So if you want to talk about how that and your work on WGBH2 kind of works together.
Well, anytime you have time to really explore these subjects, it was great when my two guests, Nicole Friedman and Dave Watson from Mass Bike and Nicole Friedman, the bike czar, sat down and said, how much time do we have? Because they're accustomed, of course, to running in and out. And here we have time to actually have a conversation about the various aspects of bike safety and what Mayor Menino's trying to do in the city, what Nicole Friedman's trying to do. And they were quite pleased to be able to have the time to explore that. And so was I. So that's the single thing that we hear back from listeners is that, gee, it's so nice to have a conversation go on a bit so that I can catch all of it.
And you'll be able to catch all of the Callie Crossley Show May 6th here at the WGBH studios. Make a contribution and join the news club at the $120 level right now. And we will set aside two passes for you, two of the limited passes that we do have for the Callie Crossley Show and the Emily Rooney Show here at the WGBH studios. And it's going to be, again, another, I'm sure, a great lineup. And we will make sure that you have a wonderful time here when you join the news club. And covering these kinds of, from food and wine to any number of subjects, that's the mission of this public radio station and these two local shows here at 89.7. Here's the number, and make sure that you understand that your pledge will be matched dollar for dollar. When you do, call 888-897-9424 or online at wgbh.org, and please make the most generous contribution that you can. For $60, it's the Food Lover's Guide to Massachusetts and the Callie Crossley and Emily Rooney Show for a pledge of $120 on May 6th. Again, 888-897-9424.